There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Welcome into Tailgate Talk SEC. I am Will Thomas. That was a hell of a week that we just got to see of college football. Obviously, a bunch of cupcake games still that kind of muddled down all the entertainment, but there were some incredible games. Let me just run through for our week two recap here. Let me just run through some quick notes for all of the cupcakes that we saw, and then I'll go way more in-depth to some of the bigger, more upsetting games, if you're picking up on my drift, for what happened last week. Starting off, Louisiana Tech at LSU. LSU only put up 23 points in this game. Now, is that concerning surface level? It could be. This was such a sandwich spot for them, coming back home from the road win at Clemson with Florida looming next week. So, I'm not very worried about LSU having a slower game, because sandwich spots, that term exists for a reason. So I'm not very worried about LSU, especially not after what we saw from Florida, which I'll get into later. Austin Peay went to Georgia. Georgia won 28-6. Kind of another slow one for one of the better teams in the SEC. I think Georgia could have been looking ahead a bit to Tennessee next week, maybe saving some of their playbook for the Vols, so I'm not overly concerned about that either. Also, that weather delay, those have weird impacts on a lot of these games, so I'm not worried about Georgia either. San Jose State at Texas. It was a slow and ugly start for Arch, but they got it going on offense, won that game 38-7. Is Arch Manning hurt? Because there was a video going around Twitter, I'm sure some of you guys have seen it, where he throws and then he's really grimacing, like he's in a lot of pain. So I'm not sure what's going on with that. Maybe he's not fully healthy. But for Texas, they have two more games against nobodies at home before a bye week, and then they go to Gainesville. So I think that should be fine. But if he is banged up, you know, you can't justify playing him in any of these smaller games, even though it does seem like he still needs to work out the kinks. If his shoulder gets beat up to where he can't play, that's a whole other problem. South Carolina State at South Carolina. Carolina won 38-10. That score is misleading. Sellers did not play very good. Their offense didn't play super good because Carolina scored three non-offensive touchdowns. Vakari Swain brought back two punts, and their defense had a scoop and score. So Carolina's offense scored 17 points at home against South Carolina State. That's not good. It could just be sleepwalking. I feels like I'm saying sleepwalking a lot and just kind of that vibe of, you know, look ahead, sandwiches, all that. It's rare that you have this many games this early where you can point to that and say, this team did not look very good, but let me try and make an excuse for it. So I don't really know. I mean, Carolina had they were pretty slow offensively against Virginia Tech also, really for most of that game. Good first drive against Tech. Punt return, deep shot to Harbor. That was about it. So, overall, my concern level for Carolina's offense isn't that high, just because I still love their talent so much. But it's definitely been interesting over these first 2 weeks against defenses who are just not as good as the conference defenses they'll play in the coming weeks to kind of struggle. But their defense played good, obviously only surrendering 10 points. Utah State at Texas A&M. A&M pulled away in the second quarter. It looked like for a little bit we might have another close call. Or not a close call, but just a kind of a close battle in the second half between the Aggies and an inferior opponent at home. Marcel Reed left the game with an injury, but it seems like he's okay. Elko gave a positive update on him this morning. And overall for A&M, they had 235 yards rushing and 319 passing. It was a great balanced offensive attack for the Aggies. They looked very sharp. Louisiana Monroe at Alabama. Bama winning 73-0. They could not have needed that any more than they did. I mean, Ty Simpson completed every pass he threw. He was 17-for-17 for 226 yards and three scores. Tons of wide receivers had meaningful contributions with multiple catches, big yards, and their defense got it, getting a shutout. That was big. That was sort of I talked about it last week before this game. Like, this needs to be a dominant attitude adjustment game, and it seems like that's what they got. East Tennessee State at Tennessee, 72-17 Vols. I talked earlier in the week about how I wanted to see Aguilar. He was explosive against Syracuse. The completion rate still wasn't there. It was much better this week, 23 of 31 for 288 yards and two scores. The Vols ran for 276 yards total. That running attack continues to be a surprise that I kind of try to tell people about. And they had 458 total yards in the air between the three quarterbacks that went in that game. College game day going there next week when Georgia comes to town. That's going to be an awesome one. Arkansas State went to Arkansas, 56-14. Hogs. Taylen Green is awesome. He threw for 239, had four touchdowns in the air, ran nine times for 151, and another touchdown. Mike Washington Jr. had another big game for Arkansas. Nine carries, 116 yards, and a score. And then our last boring game, Ball State at Auburn. Auburn won 42-3. Jackson Arnold, much better passing and ran less. I liked it a lot. He was 24-28 in the air, 251, and three touchdowns. Cam Coleman had seven catches for 77. Eric Singleton had four catches for 64 yards and two scores and a great defensive effort. Now, let's get into what was fun. I had these in order, really, of sort of impact to the country, right, and how much they were actually watched. So let me start with Vandy and Virginia Tech. 34-0. That's what Vandy did in the second half. They won the second half 34-0 after being down 20-10 going into the locker room. Diego Pavia was 12 of 18 passing for 193 yards, two scores, and a pick. McKillen Young, he ran the ball eight times for 95 yards and a score on the ground. He could be an awesome complement to Cedric Alexander, who ran the ball 10 times for 73 yards and two scores. Vandy had three different receivers who scored in Bryson Coleman, Trey Richardson, and Eli Stowers. And Kyron Jones for Tech, he looked just okay again. Now, could this be Carolina and Vandy's defenses being good? Maybe. Or maybe Jones isn't what he seemed like it could be when he was younger. But Vandy held Jones to 17 of 29 passing for 134 yards and a score. No rusher for Virginia Tech had over 36 yards on the ground. So Vandy had a great response to their ground attack. I mean, Vandy defense absolutely dominated that second half, shutting them out on their home turf for the second 30 minutes of that game. They had three sacks and eight TFLs total. Man, Clark Lee has Vanderbilt playing football. I mean, he has got them playing football. Vandy is... I'm in Nashville, and let me tell you, when I look outside and I listen, there's a buzz. There is a buzz outside in the air in Nashville about this Vandy team. Moving on now to Ole Miss at Kentucky. One of my best bets was Ole Miss minus 10. And if a lot of people got 9.5, I got a bad number. But pretty painful bad beat with Kentucky making that field goal at the end. But as a football move, it made total sense. If you're Stoops there, you got to kick that field goal, make it a one-score game because you have to get an onside kick anyways. So it was definitely the right football move. Just brutal if you took Ole Miss on the spread. Austin Simmons, I just don't know. I just don't know. He was 13 of 24 in the air. He threw two picks, no touchdowns. He was fine on the ground. He ended up running eight times for 44 yards. He did get in the end zone on the ground also. But man, Kwon Lacy for Ole Miss, he looks really good. He ran the ball 28 times yesterday for 138 yards and a score. Harrison Wallace III, he's clearly the go-to guy receiver. He had four catches for 117. And on the defensive fronts, Ole Miss really separated themselves. They had three sacks. Kentucky had zero. And man, Zach Calzada was unimpressive again. I had him at 15, I think, on my SEC quarterback power rankings. Really should have had him at 16 in hindsight. He was 15 of 30 passing, 149 yards. And Ole Miss was able to contain Dante Dowdle, who only ran for 56 yards on 14 carries. To Seth McGowan's credit, though, however, he really took over that spot for Kentucky, running the ball 15 times, 93 yards, and a score. And when Kentucky jumped out to that 10-0 lead, everything kind of came back to me about, like, man, Kentucky really is Ole Miss's kryptonite. Austin Simmons is even less prepared for this than I thought he was. This could be a tie-turning win for Kentucky, who I think is going to be bad this year. Never mind. Never mind. They just couldn't. They couldn't close it out. So a good win for Ole Miss on the road to kind of come back from that double-digit deficit and win the game comfortably. Even though it was only a 7-point lead, they were never losing that game at the end. Let's go to the border showdown now. Kansas at Missouri. Missouri gave up 21 points in the first quarter. Part of that was because of turnovers, and only 10 the rest of the way. Defense really locked it in when they had to. Bo Perbula is playing awesome. I was not high on him. I was not high on him coming into this year at all, especially after he didn't take that job in fall camp. Hand up. 30 of 39 passing for 334 and three touchdowns. He's playing awesome. And for their running game, Kansas had linebackers hurt coming into this one. So my conclusion there and why I took Missouri laying 6.5 was they're going to be able to run the ball really well because that second level is going to be open to get by weaker linebackers and get to the secondary. Jamal Roberts, 13 carries, 143 yards, and a score. Ahmad Hardy, 25 carries, 112 yards, and another score. Elite ground game for Missouri in this one. Kevin Coleman Jr. had 10 catches for 126 and a touchdown also. And Missouri's defense, they contained Jalen Daniels, really, really well. He ran the ball 10 times for only 17 yards. He did get in the end zone. But only 17 rushing yards for Jalen Daniels is very, very good for Missouri. Daniels throwing the ball, he was 18 of 30 for 223 and two touchdowns, also with a pick. Kansas only had 28 rushing yards in this game. And if you go to ESPN, one of their offensive linemen is recorded having negative 25 rushing yards. I'm not counting that. So I'm giving Kansas credit for 28 total rushing yards. Awesome job by Missouri's defense. Just an awesome job. That atmosphere was awesome. The game was total chaos. It was everything that you could have possibly wanted from the border showdown. All right, let's just get this out of the way here. I mean, Florida, the coaching staff, the decision-making, the execution. I mean, seriously, could that game have been coached any worse? I don't think it could have, because their offensive scheme, I mean, this has been covered a lot, but Billy Napier is also calling the plays. He will not hire an offensive coordinator, even though he has been pushed in that direction. And the play calling, the consistency of it, it's been a question mark and a point of contempt for the fans for years, since he's been there. And the same problems are still there for the Gators. The offense is over-reliant on tight ends to be a part of this offense. Hayden Hansen is not a great tight end. He's totally fine, but he's not good. You should not be trying to get this guy the ball in key situations. Tony Livingston, another totally okay tight end. The guy was playing defensive end 2 years ago. Why in the world, if you're Napier in Florida, is that who you're trying to get the ball to? When you have Vernell Brown, you have Aiden Mizell, you have Trey Wilson out wide, you have Jaden Ball at running back. I mean, they went away from Jaden Ball after that first drive. Ball averaged more than 5 yards a carry that whole game. He had 50 yards on the first drive of that game. And when Florida got the ball with, 3 minutes left about to kind of close it out, he didn't see the field. Just the rotation of the backs, I think, is a good idea in a vacuum. Doing it to where Jaden Ball is not on the field when you just need two first downs is absolute malpractice. It's absolute malpractice. And the discipline issues, just the execution in year 4 of Napier is absolutely inexcusable. Brandon Bett is the Florida player who spit on the USF lineman, giving them 15 yards and a free first down after a negative play. I mean, I'm not sure he should see the field again this year. I'm really not sure he should, because doing that, just period, is a horrible decision. It's a horrible decision because you know it's been well defined. It's 15 yards and you're gone. What makes it even crazier is that 2 days before this, Jalen Carter got tossed from Thursday Night Football for doing the exact same thing. So how in the world, in that spot, do you spit on a guy's face? It's absurd for so many reasons. And I mean, the punt snap that went over the punter's head for a safety, Florida lost the game by 2. They lost the game by 2 because there is just sloppy mistakes that don't even make any sense. They don't even make any sense. And I mean, like I've said, this is the exact same problems that Florida has had in the past 3 seasons. And I had bought into Napier, you know, okay, we've got the bad stuff out of the way. We've learned from our mistakes. This is by far the most talented roster he has had in Gainesville. Now you can't beat USF at home. Because in the beginning, right, these mistakes would happen. He would go to the press conference and he would say the same things. He would say, it's on me, it's on us as coaches to make sure the execution gets better. We're going to go into the lab, we're going to get better, we're going to come out. That was refreshing to hear for Florida fans after Dan Mullen. You can't keep saying it when the problems don't get fixed. Then it just becomes like a slap in the face to fans. Because it's almost like he's telling them, you know, it's fine, we'll get it fixed, just don't worry about it. Like, you're not getting it fixed, the same problems. Man, I mean, in Florida's schedule, 1-5 to start this year, I think, is fully on the table. And when that happens, Florida's got a new coaching search to begin. And honestly, in my opinion, they should have not let Alex Golish leave the stadium that night. Strickland should have gone down there, said, great game, Alex. Awesome job coaching your team. Do you want to come to Baton Rouge with us next week and run our football program? That's what should have happened. Because it's clear, I won't say it's clear yet, because we saw this happen last year where he turned it around and it was fine. Man, Billy Napier has got to get turned around. He has to. I will say, one positive for Florida, defense was fine. Defense was good. There's not a whole lot to complain about defensively, because only giving up 18 points at home should never be an issue. And really only 16 because of the safety. So, man, I it's really hard for me to figure out a way that Florida turns this around and, like, is able to be competitive at LSU this week. They lose that game in bad fashion. How do you go to Miami and compete? Then you get a bye week to just sit on it and have everybody tell you how bad you are before Texas comes in. Like, the schedule was hard enough as it is when we all thought this team could be different. If this team is going to be bad and mismanaged, it's going to be an absolute nightmare. Absolute nightmare. Arizona State and Mississippi State. How about a much more happy story? How about we change the mood a little bit and get a lot happier? Mississippi State, man. That was an awesome environment. They played incredibly. Sam Leavitt was absolutely locked down. He was only 10 of 22 passing for 82 yards. Did have a touchdown and threw two picks. Bulldogs picked him off twice. He ran it pretty good. Or ASU did as a whole. They had two running backs, I believe, both go over 100 yards. Unless I'm making that up. Well, I think I'm making that up. But they ran it really well as a team, regardless. The Sun Devils did. Blake Shapen looked awesome. I ranked him, I think I ranked him at 16 on my power rankings for quarterbacks preseason. Hands back up again. Hand is back up again. He looks really, really good. 19 of 33 passing, 279, and three touchdowns. There wasn't much in the ground game for State in this game, but they didn't need it at all. I mean, Brennan Thompson was absolutely incredible. Two big touchdown catches, including the one in the final minute to put them over the top. And man, that goal line stand. I mean, being able to hunker down like that and keep ASU out of the end zone to give your offense a chance to go win the game and not say you have to go score to tie it. Say you got to get downfield and you have a chance to win this game with a big play. And that's exactly what they did. And I've got something to say about Starkville, Mississippi. That place, when they have reason, the fans do, to get up and really make a difference in the game, that place is probably one of the hardest places to play in the country. Now, don't click off the video and stop yelling at me. I get it. I get it. It's fine. But, I mean, those fans are ridiculous. They love football, and they want to see it played at a high level. So when they do get that, they're off the rails. The cowbells. It sounds ridiculous to say, but, I mean, the cowbells are such an advantage because nobody else has that. It is the most unique home field advantage in the country because you look at what ASU was doing to prep for it. They had two people who each had little baby cowbells walking around the practice field just like dinky dinky dink all week. That's how people can that like that's the best way to simulate this is four little baby cowbells from your trainers. If that's the best way to simulate this thing, how can you ever be ready going in there when you have tens of thousands of people slamming cowbells? Like just because of how unique the environment is, and also just how passionate those fans are, that's really why I think Mississippi State can be one of the hardest places to go win on the road when that crowd has a reason to believe and the team has a reason to believe. But anyways, final game of the week, game of the week, was Michigan at Oklahoma. Game day was there. Big spot for both teams to try and propel themselves into the playoff discussions and kind of show that what they're doing is working. Oklahoma did just that. John Mateer looked good again. He was 21 of 34 passing for 270 and a touchdown. Did have one pick on that overthrow. That's just something that can probably get cleaned up. But that wasn't a great ball. Everything else was great. He led the team with 74 rushing yards as well, did Mateer, and two touchdowns on the ground. Deion Burks broke 100, got in the end zone. He looks like he's emerging as that wide receiver one in a room where I kind of thought Jaden and Javonte Gibson might be pushing for that wide receiver one spot. Deion Burks seems to be taking it over. And I talked this past week about how I thought Brent Venables versus Bryce Underwood was a massive advantage to Oklahoma and Venables because we've seen how much these young quarterbacks are struggling early in the year, especially on the road, and that came true again. Underwood was 9 of 24 passing for 142 yards. Venables absolutely dominated Underwood. Justice Haynes, though, the running back from Michigan, still had a good day. Ran the ball 19 times, 125 yards, and a score, but it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. I mean, if you've watched any of what I've put out this season so far and over the summer, you know that I think Oklahoma is a 10-win team who's going to make the playoff. They looked good, man. They looked really, the defense looked great. I mean, I'm not sure that many other teams, if any other teams, are going to be able to hold Michigan to 13 again. I think scoring 24 on Michigan is also going to be a rare commodity that we'll see play out as the season goes on. I'm so high on Oklahoma. I'm so high on them, man. And I think that winning this game against Michigan, obviously it propels you up to like, okay, we really are what we think we are. We can beat these good teams from other conferences. We can make a playoff push. We're 2-0. We'll be, I don't know where they're ranked in the AP. I think they're 13 maybe this week. I know it came out recently, but I didn't look too hard at it. But man, Oklahoma's right there. Oklahoma's right there to make a playoff push. We'll see how they do in conference. I am high on them in conference this year. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm pretty sure I got everything. Yeah, I got everything. All right, so awesome week two. Awesome week two of college football, even though there's a bunch of these cupcakes, man. Still a lot of small schools, FCS schools on the schedules. That does not make the football any less entertaining. We had great games in every window of the day. Greatest sport on the planet, man. Greatest sport on the planet. And week three, we got some big games coming up next week. Georgia at Tennessee. Florida at LSU is definitely less enticing now after what we just saw. But we are getting into conference play. We are getting going. We get Vandy at Carolina next week. Also, Wisconsin to Alabama. There are just all of these matchups that are just so enticing to look at. And it's going to be even better when they're actually playing. Oh, Texas, Notre Dame. I forgot Texas A&M goes Notre Dame next week. This is such a good sport. This is a great sport. I love it so much. All right. That's it. I'll get into the previews for all those games I just mentioned later on in the week. Thank you for listening to Tailgate Talk SEC. I have been Will Thomas, and let's get ready for another great week of college football.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.